Everyone gets nightmares, and they often get ones that repeat themselves over months or years. I've had one for decades. It only shows up every once in a while, but I always remember it when I wake up. In it, I am introduced to some sort of architectural marvel, maybe some building or location that has all sorts of features that I love. And somewhere in there, somebody reveals to me that I'm the owner, the renter, the person in charge of this awesome space. And then I find out that due to either my not using it or coming to the end of a term, I actually have to give it back. That I never used it, that it was a space open to me that I wasted. And then I feel really terrible, and then I wake up. It's something that I think speaks to the fact that I've seen some really wonderful places in my life, and that there's something I've always wanted to do, and I haven't quite done it yet. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I have a special soft spot for places that are out in the real world as part of a mall or shopping center or office space that let me decide how it's going to be presented. This has to come from arcades, that I would walk into what would normally be a boring location, and it's been decorated to the hilt with some sort of stickers or neat rug or even something as cool as a spaceship in a corner that's been built up into the ceiling so it looks like it crashed in. The idea of presenting, of a stage that you walk through to interact with, it's all wrapped together somehow. Dreams and nightmares are often reveries of things that your mind is thinking about, and I have to assume from this constantly repeating nightmare that I like the idea of holding court in some assigned space that's presented to people. For example, I have visited Austria a couple times, a guest of Johannes Gerzfrenner and the Monochrome Organization. And their office, which they have held for a good number of years, is in this very bizarre artist's area that is built inside of the old Royal Austrian stables, where the horses used to be are now little tiny storefronts that are actually, in most cases, artworks. Maybe somebody showing off some fashions they're working on, or a electronics and video installation. Either way, they give you essentially a small store space that you can have people walk by and see your art on their way to a restaurant or the adjoining museums. I have not seen stuff like this in a lot of other places, so my mind reels with the possibilities. Given a 10 by 12 space with white paint on the walls and a very large window in the front, what would I put in there? Do I want to have some sort of live updating electronics work done in the processing graphics language that people can study and walk away with new ideas and perspectives? Or do I want to make some sort of beautiful retro computer location that feels like something from a time now gone involving 1970s colors, plastic and metal assembled? What do I want to do with it? The idea that people would have to see an exhibit put forward, it's just incredibly alluring to me. These artist stalls in the museum quarter of Austria, they're really beautiful, and they're very inspiring. But I've been in so many other architectural spaces that call for this to happen. In a number of places that I've lived, like Cambridge, Massachusetts, there's been spaces that have been turned into shopping areas. Harvard Square was full of them. But obviously they are aimed to become stores or are stores in waiting. The idea of putting an artist somewhere for a month doesn't really occur to a lot of the equity firms that own commercial properties now. I've spent a little bit too much time on the real estate side not to know that it is too much trouble to have an artist move in and then move out shortly thereafter. It's better to have the site completely empty and abandoned for years on end in the hope that some chain will buy it and be guaranteed income. It's a shame there's no incentive to make these spaces into temporary works of art. As you drive across the country, you'll find these buildings that are so out of place, so unusual and weird, you know that the mind behind it was used to being told it was a bad idea and then ignoring everybody and going ahead full speed. Buildings with strange shapes or unusual building materials that might house some sort of tourist trap, but a long way away from the people who created it. There was a building on Route 9 near where I lived that was in various incarnations, a record store, a credit union, probably one or two other things before it was finally plowed under and turned into a generic square. Think of a pyramid, a wooden pyramid, and at the top of that pyramid, the capstone is now 2 or 3 feet higher with a glass skylight going around the bottom of it. It looked like something that had landed more than something that had been built. It survived for probably 20, 30 years before it itself was plowed under and turned into something else. But even as my family would drive north to some other destination, I'd look out at that building and I'd be inspired. I'd try to think about what I would put in there. Would it be a computer store or a store that sold art? Or would it house a secret computer base that I could visit on my own when I'd learn how to drive? So, yeah, I've had a lot of time to think about unusual structures and unusual spaces. Enough that it inhabits my dreams. Other beautiful architectural places and inspiring spaces I've been part of have all been hacker groups having some sort of building they're renting and filling it up with all the technology they could ever want, pooling all of their resources so that they each individually didn't have to ruin a basement or not have access to everything they wanted. I've been to computer spaces all over the world, and maybe it's hacker spaces I've seen this dream come to life the most. I was a visitor, and in no way an owner or co-conspirator of The Loft in Boston, which came about because a group of friends wanted a space they could share, and they ended up having it in multiple places until the entire space was purchased, of all things, by a security company, combining a play space with a workspace to, by some standards, utter disaster. I was invited to, and I spoke at, the CT Hackerspace, a little north of Waterbury, Connecticut. The folks who run that were families. I thought that was a really wonderful thing. It was actual full families who had pooled their resources and gotten a space in an industrial park. And it was both a place for teaching, a place for exploration, and a workshop with all sorts of tools pooled together. So if there was something you needed to do, it could get done. Outside of the idea of a hackerspace being hidden or put away out of the eyes of the authorities, this felt more like a technically oriented community center that a bunch of families had decided they wanted to share. In Europe, I found myself in a number of hackerspaces that just have blown me away. I've gone to the Hack 42 space in the Netherlands a couple times. Those folks think big. It's a drive to get out there, but once you're there, it is an oasis. There's a room that almost functions like a coffee club with a bar and all sorts of snacks and soda that help pay for the place. And then there's rooms that are nothing but console games or old equipment or a camera studio. All of the different rooms on the different floors are somebody saying, "We should have this," And it just keeps getting refined until the whole of that room is dedicated to that purpose. Some time ago, they talked to me about going through their old library and scanning in as much of the documentation as they could. And they're up to 3 scanners and doing hundreds of individual manuals and books, and they've been going up on the Internet Archive. It's the space aspect that always blew me away. Being able to take a certain room within this hacker building and filling it with paper and scanners and allowing whoever's working on it at that time to keep the 3 scanning stations running at full speed when they're there. It's an embodiment of a dream. In those nightmares I have, where a space is presented to me at the very moment I'm going to lose it, it's not a matter of being scared or terrified like a standard nightmare. It's just melancholy and sadness that something is coming to an end and I never, ever took advantage of it. Something amazing could have happened here, and for whatever reason, which in the dreams I never work out, I never work on the project. It doesn't happen. It's that inherent missing out of losing something wonderful before I even have a chance to see what it'll be, which is at the core of why I'll wake up sad afterwards. It just gets to the core of why I've worked on so many weird things over the years. Perhaps, in some small way, this is what websites were for me back in the early 1990s when I first heard about them. Because it was such an expensive proposition to do color printing in the early 1990s. It would cost you $1 or $1.50 a page, and the approach to doing mass production of color pages was well beyond the range of a 19 to 20-year-old. You weren't going to be able to afford it. So the idea that with a few simple commands, you could call forth anything onto a screen. You wouldn't have to worry about how many colors were in each image. You didn't have to worry about where layout would run into problems or putting things out in a page maker file and hoping the printing would come back right. You could just make it come alive. And then it fell to you to wonder, what are you going to talk about? Myself and thousands and later millions of other people have been faced with this problem online. What did I want to say? Where's the message that I want to get across? For some people, it's talking about something they don't think anybody else is going to cover. Maybe some aspect of some band, or maybe their own lives and their own families. Whatever it is, they set their minds around it, start to figure out what images and what writing there is, and based on their actual ability to express themselves, they set off and do it. The wreckage of all of these 1990 websites that we've been capturing are, in fact, my dream personified. We make fun of different aspects of it, the color schemes, the choice of layout, but it's somebody who may have never fancied themselves an artist, a publisher, a writer, and now they've gotten the opportunity to do it. Nobody comes out of the gate perfect. It's refinement and practicing over and over again. That's what brings skill out. And having folks, for the first time in their lives, be a voice out to thousands and millions, it's an inspiring thing to watch. Watching those old websites come alive through the Wayback Machine and other projects, you can see, fundamentally, the heart behind it. Baked somewhere in all of this is the desire to have made a mark, to take the space, the square, the rectangle, the building, and leave something of yourself for others to see, to remember you, to know perhaps what your dreams were. I think that's what drives a lot of the creative world that we're in. And so, even though I do wake up sad, I'm glad that somewhere in my mind, it's important to me that I'm constantly reminded that when opportunity comes in the form of a weird room or an empty booth or a blank page, or a scrolling Audacity application. To leap forward, to fill it with your dreams and your ideas and your thoughts. Refine it, try it again and again, and never, ever doubt that you should. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Beghoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, Mark Pilgrim, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, and Joshua Stein, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. For the folks who are keeping track of my finances, I made payment arrangements with the IRS for my 2018 taxes. That means that I'm caught up to last year's taxes. That's a great feeling. I ended up hitting my deductible, so no new medical debts, and I have been refining my spending patterns such that I feel really good about it. So good, in fact, that whatever space was being taken by fears about finances have been taken with exercise and weight loss. I'm once again trying to squeeze in miles of walking and workouts to ensure that I am as fit and as healthy as can be. And I thank you so much for helping this to happen.